Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken Edwards with the NCL. Sitting to my right, Ed Maher with the NCL. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Easter Sunday.
Yeah, I am risen. I was risen early this morning.
You got risen out of bed.
I did.
Phil Davidson, Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Phil.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. How's it going?
Very well, thank you.
We got some super guests on today.
Yeah, we do.
Right?
Big time. Probably the best guest we've ever had.
It's very nice. He's referring to Rob Pasta.
Local 150 attorney.
That's right.
Yeah, so we're going to have two of Phil's bosses on the air today.
Yes.
Right? Kevin and John, they're going to hear talk about
two
tax fraud.
Labor leaders.
And, you know, yeah, yes. Really, really, like super, super important things that labor's doing, mm-hmm. particularly carpenters, around the issue of tax fraud.
Tax fraud.
What it means, what it means for, you know, what does it mean for you? What does it mean for worker bees? And quite frankly, what does it mean for the economy?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So like, really important.
And taxpayers.
Yeah.
Everybody paying taxes has a reason to be interested in
yes.
this.
Absolutely. And speaking of paying taxes, you know who doesn't pay taxes?
Amazon?
Every giant megacorp?
Yeah. Well, it was a big week for those guys because the money they save in taxes.
They were able to go to space.
They get to do fun things like build rockets.
Yeah.
And this week, we got to watch Jeff Bezos. He sent his girlfriend to space. And Katy Perry and, you know, a couple other people. It,
yeah,
was,
yeah.
It was an all-female crew, but...
A couple other luminaries.
It's just like, can we just tax billionaires?
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
sending people to space, and he's not the only one.
Yeah.
There's like three
right.
of them.
They're that's lighting right. their money on fire.
Yeah.
But it is like, that. You know what? You're funny. It's like they're smoking cigars with $100 bills, right? I mean, that's like, so like the stock market's crashing. Hundreds of thousands of people are losing their jobs. Federal employees are losing their collective bargaining rights, right? The world's like literally on fire right now.
Yeah.
Tariff, no tariff,
yeah.
tariff, no tariff, right? Just crazy, crazy stuff going on. And this guy's like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna send five women to space.
I know.
Yeah. And ordinary middle class people are like, wow.
Yeah, that was, I wish that was me.
Yeah.
First of all, by the way, I wouldn't get on his rocket. I just wouldn't trust him.
I wouldn't get on Elon's rockets.
Well, that's for sure.
That's
but especially
sure.
with Jeff Bezos' girlfriend on there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there's something nefarious going on, like
yeah,
sending
no
her
kidding.
Up there, like, make it look like an accident.
Yeah. It's been a while. I mean, they've been together a while.
Have they?
I think so.
So
we got to get ready for the show, though.
We do.
Yeah, well, we have a special show because we're joined in the studio.
By?
Yeah. By the...
Built to Last.
Built to Last.
By the camera crew from Built to Last.
Yeah, we're going to be on TV.
Radio stars, TV stars, I don't know what's next.
Multi-hyphenates.
Stage.
When is it going to be on?
This, our show, Built to Last, which is about the Carpenters Union and union workers in general, airs, premiere episode is going to be July 12th, 10:30 a.m. on WGN.
No way.
We'll remind
that?
You, everybody.
So is that going to be us? Are we going to be on that one?
We, possibly. I will let all
that's
the listeners
no.
know. No, we haven't... We haven't quite stacked the show just yet, but
yeah.
whatever episode this does appear on, I will obviously let all the listeners know. But please tune into the show, though, if you're a fan of unions. It begins on WGN, 10:30, Saturday morning, starting July 12th.
That's
awesome.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Is that like all over the Midwest, or where does that?
Yeah, we're on in 11 markets, so not just here.
Super cool.
Yeah, we're on 11 markets throughout Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, and Eastern Iowa.
That's awesome. All right, so listen, we're going to play a clip from Cafe Beyond.
Yeah, our show last week featuring Rob Pasta,
yep.
the Associate General Counsel from Local 150, the Operating Engineers.
Talking about the labor board.
Super interesting.
Yeah, really, really smart dude. And then obviously, we're going to be here with the Carpenters Labor Leaders, talking about tax fraud and the things that they're doing. So we'll be right back with more of the Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Worker's Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. We are stoked today to have with us Rob Pasta, and he is from the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. Welcome, Rob.
Hey guys,
welcome back.
Great to be back.
Yeah,
yeah,
friend of the show.
Yeah, been on. How many times have you been on?
This is my second time.
This is your second time?
Yeah.
What's your title?
I am Associate General Counsel for Local 150.
Okay, so does that mean you're number two?
Come yeah, on. Me and seven other people are number two.
Oh, you all have that same title?
We do.
Okay.
He's modest.
What were you, number seven?
Great to have you back.
No, I was talking to Ken.
Oh, yeah.
No, Rob's number two. I thought Ken was number seven.
First of all, Rob...
He's a real lawyer.
He's a real lawyer, you know? So during my career at Local 150, for those listening, and those of you in the room, I think know very well that I'm more of an ideas person. So I'm not kidding, though. I would have an idea, and I would roll it by Rob, and Rob would go, yeah, that's stupid. Yeah, that's never going to happen. But every once in a while, Rob would go,
I'm going to work all night on this.
Let me talk to Dale about this. And then would come back with like a 5-page memo about why it's actually legit, right? So we did a bunch of work, Janice, right? And Right to Work and Fighting Right to Work. And you helped us like sort of get some of the framework of the National Coalition of Labor. Do we have to represent certain folks and, you know, that kind of thing. So much appreciated everything that you've done for us to help us.
Yeah, it was great working with you, and you're being modest about the percentage of great ideas versus stupid ideas. So.
Yeah, but Rob, how much legwork did he do on those ideas? Or was he like, hey, Rob, you're my clerk. Take care of this.
No, it wasn't like clerk. No? It was like I would just come up with, like, I have an idea for, like, something I think is, like, this is probably a First Amendment issue. Like, if for example, if a free rider, meaning that somebody that doesn't pay dues in a right-to-work state, has an associational First Amendment right not to associate with the union, doesn't the union in turn have its own association right not to associate with somebody that doesn't pay dues?
We think so. It's not been settled yet, but it's a fight that we're willing to take on.
Hell yeah,
we are.
We
have taken, and something that we're working to change legislatively to make it a more solid legal argument.
You know, it's funny you should say that, right? Because and we're going to get to this, like, actually why you're here in a second. What do you say? So a lot of times we would come up with an idea and we're like, yeah, let's float that, you know, down the road. And simultaneously, like, while we're preparing for litigation and everybody's getting ready to litigate, you know, and gear up for lawyers and whatnot, we would craft a bill and send it down to Springfield very quietly. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, the law changed. Like, we don't... Lawsuit dropped, law changed, right? It worked pretty well. It was pretty funny.
Even when we think we're right, we want to make sure that we're going to be right. So why not just change the law?
Yeah, stack the deck.
Yeah, it's almost like it's like the Supreme Court right now, right? Yeah, he stacked the deck.
Pretty much.
He can't be wrong.
Right.
Yeah, we might want to wait a couple of years on some of these cases, by the way.
Not a good idea.
Slow play them?
Yeah, I think we're going to slow walk some of these things. All right, so Rob... we've talked about, so you're with 150, you've been 150 for how long?
Back for 10 and a half years, but I was a law clerk then before that for 2.5 years.
And you went to work for CSX, right?
I did. I was with the railroad for almost 5 years.
Did you like it?
I did.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bad job.
It was in Florida.
It was.
Right?
Yeah.
Jacksonville.
Yes.
All right. So does that mean you're like a Florida sports fan or no?
No.
Yeah, no. No. God, no.
The Jaguars? I mean, I don't think people live in Jacksonville are Jaguars fans. Yeah.
They can't
hold
the lower level.
All right, so check this out, right? All right, we've been talking about the National Labor Relations Board, right? You know, our position at Local 150 for a very long time has been to avoid the labor board at all costs. We found it, you know, just to jam us up, and quite frankly, they would do more harm than good, I think. Plus, it was antiquated. It just had no teeth, right? Remedies were vague, you know, basically non-existent. And so right now, we keep going back and forth on a national level, right? So explain, just like in plain English, what's going on with the labor board nationally?
Sure. So to back it up, I think in this story, 1935 was a big year, right?
We're going to back it up to 1935?
Take us back.
It moves quickly, though, from there.
You've been working for Dale for a long time.
Yeah.
The National Labor Relations Act was created in 1935, and within the Act, Congress established the National Labor Relations Board.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
So it's a 5-member board. All the members are appointed by the president, but for staggered terms.
Yep.
And
bipartisan?
Well, two from each party, and then the president gets to select the chairman, so kind of the president gets to pick the tie-breaking vote, essentially. But in the statute, it says that board members can only be removed for neglect of duty or malfeasance.
Right. Now, that's in the statute.
In the statute.
Okay. So that's the what I would call the law.
It is created by Congress.
Okay, a law.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Which is, you know, in the Constitution, the congressional role is to create laws.
Right.
Okay. Is malfeasance defined?
It's not. It's just, okay. I mean, it's been interpreted and defined by the courts, but it's not defined in the act.
Phil, if anybody's familiar with malfeasance, it's you.
Yeah, it should be. Well, I'm,
but basically,
my crimes are a little harder than malfeasance, yeah.
The, like wrongdoing or doing your job okay, incorrectly would be the definition. So also in 1935, the U.S. Supreme Court decided a case called Humphrey's Executor.
The FTC, right?
Right, which said that the president can't remove, if Congress puts those kind of limitations on a multi-member adjudicatory body, the president can't just come in and say, I don't care what Congress said, I'm removing that person.
Right.
So that was 1935, but that's been upheld by the Supreme Court numerous times, including, I think, as recently as like 2010.
Oh,
so this
right?
has been good law for, you know, 90 years.
Right.
Now it's being called into question because Trump's not getting his way.
Okay. And so I read that one of their arguments against Humphreys was that it only applied to the exact circumstances in 1935 of the FTC chairman. That's it.
Right.
And that the Supreme Court should ignore everything else that doesn't exactly fit into that fact pattern. That's their argument.
It's the only argument they could have, right? I mean, if it was good law in 1935, the Supreme Court's upheld it all of these times. What, now it's bad law because it's not what Trump wants.
I mean, there's I don't know if you were familiar with this. Something happened with this case called Roe v. Wade recently, so that might not really matter that much anymore in terms of legal precedent, but we'll see. Right.
The reason that this is back in conversation is because Gwen Wilcox was fired probably, like 6 weeks ago?
It was January of this year. So Gwen Wilcox was reappointed right. in 2023 for a five-year term, which is also in the act, mm-hmm. right? So Trump gets in office. He fires her, not claiming that there was a neglect of duty or malfeasance, but that her opinions in cases since her term began are inconsistent with his beliefs.
Yeah, right.
So that I'm getting rid of her for that reason.
I.e., I don't like her.
Right.
Not
right.
malfeasance.
Okay. Right. And you know, I'll just say it because it's true. She's a black female.
And that left the board with only two active members, right? So they have no quorum, so the NLRB can no longer function, certify elections, anything, right?
Cannot issue a decision unless it has a quorum. You need three for a quorum. It has two in the absence of Gwen Wilcox. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so that happens, right? She sues. She wins, right? So, okay, here I am. I'm back on the board, right? I go to my office. Right. Then what?
So she filed a lawsuit in the District Court of D.C.
Yep.
And on March 6th, the District Court said, the law on this is clear.
Yeah.
We're not going to overrule the Supreme Court.
Right.
They've been consistent on this. You get your job back.
Right.
You know, basically granted her injunction to give her job back.
Yeah.
And what, you know, the case is captioned Wilcox v. Trump.
Uh-huh.
So what Trump did was file basically two appeals, one to the D.C. Circuit Court
yep.
and another directly to the Supreme Court
right.
using some like antiquated, you know, infrequently used method to get cases directly to the Supreme Court. So while the case is pending at the Supreme Court, the D.C. Circuit initially did not grant the immediate reinstatement,
right.
but then an en banc panel, which is the full complement of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, agreed with the district court and ordered her back to work. So,
right.
you know, back to work for a very short period of time because 3 days later the Supreme Court said, no, we're staying this case without reason just until we further rule on the case. So that's...
So he basically
she's a political football. It's just back and forth. Back
oh my
and
god,
forth.
That's terrible. So Trump basically goes to his home court advantage, right? Supreme
right.
Court, and which usually would not get involved with something like this. Supreme Court then says, no, everything's on hold. You're not on the board, so we currently don't have a quorum, right? And we'll let you know when we make our decision. Now
right.
let me guess. Let me just. Who wants to take a bet where that decision is going? Right.
You know,
if I'm a gambling man,
try to be optimistic, but it's hard
it
to
certainly
be optimistic.
Is. Yeah.
And it's not clear how this is going to progress either. Did the Supreme Court act just to block basically the reinstatement of board member Wilcox? or is it going to rule on the case altogether immediately? We don't know, because if the block stays in place and now it has to progress through the D.C. District Court, right, on the merits,
because it's just appeals,
the injunction, and then the Court of Appeals, and then the Supreme Court.
Right. Now you're talking years. Board,
correct.
Okay. And which, by the way, has the exact same effect, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right? No board.
Right.
No quorum.
Unless additional members are appointed.
Right. Unless, so suppose he says, okay, I'm going to appoint these other four guys, right? And one of his appointees, by the way, is right here from Chicago, actually. A safe harbor attorney, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So,
But the minority party still gets, or supposed to have, two seats?
Supposed to have.
It's practice, just, right? Is it in the act? Or?
I believe it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you know, this goes back to, once again, the fact that there's a two-party system in this country, and then we continue to flip-flop, right?
Yeah.
So every 4 years, captive audience meetings are illegal. Now they're not illegal. Now they're illegal. Now they're not illegal, just using an example. But it's just a mess.
It's absurd.
It's a mess.
Well, and unnecessary.
Unnecessary, right?
Because
right.
The president appoints the board members, gets to pick the chairman, and appoints the general counsel. So this... He would have had control,
he's gonna have control
by
anyways.
Appointments anyway.
Right.
This was just an unnecessary insult to...
An unnecessary termination, i.e. the rest of the terminations that are happening throughout the country right now.
Right.
Unnecessary.
Right.
Punitive. Right?
Yep.
Retaliatory, if you will.
I don't agree with her, so I want her gone.
That's right. Yeah, I'm
how
angry.
How much of it was driven by a desire to not have a quorum on the board?
It's a great point.
Well, I mean...
Wow.
I'm one of the people, that's a great point, I'm one of the people that believe that might be the goal, right? That it's better to have a National Labor Relations Act so the union has conduct that is effective but also illegal and can be penalized a different way in federal court for that, but at the same time effectively making useless any sort of decisions that could likely go in the union's favor, reinstatements, things of that nature, illegal acts by the employers.
Right.
And so now
we saw that recently with
Whole Foods.
With Whole Foods, and then also with 399, right? Wasn't that the argument made by the hospitals that...
Well, everybody's jumping on this bandwagon.
Right, saying there's no quorum.
Yeah,
so
say, like, listen, there's no quorum, so therefore you can't certify any elections, right? And, you know, therefore, you know, all your unionizing drives, Amazon, Chipotle, Trader Joe's, the stupid hot dog stand, Portillo's, you know, like all of them, it's a hot dog stand, and they're jumping on the Supreme Court bandwagon for Christ's sakes.
Right.
And by the way, I was a fan of them, you know, back in the Bone of Beef days, if you remember.
We were handing out sandwiches.
We handed out free Portillo's when we were fighting with Bone of Beef.
Right.
Now we're best buddies with Bone of Beef, and Portillo's is taking the opposite. It's like, Jesus. But yeah, so they're using that as a means to not certify unions, and, you know, once again. And then, by the way, on top of it, to add insult to injury, Rob, they're claiming that the National Labor Relations Board is unconstitutional, right?
Correct. Well, the administrative law judges
are
unconstitutional themselves, who are the people that rule on this. So kind of this fight of who's the appropriate adjudicatory branch. Is it the, you know, when Congress sets up, you know, decision makers to decide these things in the first instance, or, you know, is it up to the executive branch and Trump just gets to decide to do whatever he wants to do, whenever he wants to do it, as far as who's deciding cases?
Well, it certainly seems like that's what's going on right now, right?
Right.
But, I mean, look, the board was set up, and the ALJs, meaning administrative law judges, are set up because they are experts in this area, right? All they do is hear National Labor Relations Board cases, so they're very familiar with the law. 300, you know, whatever, 100 plus years of statutory history and legal precedent, blah, 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 blah. Now you're going to throw all that into the courts, right?
Right. Or, I mean, and it sort of is now, right? ALJ makes a decision and recommendation.
And if they don't like it, goes to the court.
Considers it, who is appointed by the president case, or could be.
Yeah.
And then if one party doesn't like that, it goes to the Court of Appeal for review. So this is all the checks and balances that the founding fathers considered, you know, in this whole thing.
Did you say checks and balances?
What's that?
It's a carryover joke, I think, from one of the last shows, right?
Oh, thank you so much for remembering that.
Yeah, I'm a listener.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, they ate my checks and balances. All right, so listen, thank you for the update, Rob. Anything else that you want to say?
No, thanks for having me on. I appreciate all the work that you guys do. This is important for the city, for the labor movement, and you know, thanks for everything.
That's
thanks
nice.
For having me back.
That's nice of you to say. We will be back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Ken, Ed, Phil, and we are super stoked today to have Phil's bosses.
Two of them.
Double boss day.
Yes.
So, Phil, this is your bailiwick. Introduce us to our guest today.
It is my pleasure and honor to introduce the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council, Mr. Kevin McLaughlin.
Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yeah, super psyched to have you.
Yes. And also with us is our Director of Operations, John Yeager.
John Yeager.
Yeager.
Like Yeager Bomb.
It's a party name.
Jägermeister.
Jägermeister, Jäger Bomb, right?
Yeah.
Right? Isn't it the same thing?
It's the same thing.
That's what I tell everyone.
I've heard.
Yeah.
Actually, you've heard?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember.
Because on paper, it doesn't look like Jaeger, but that's what I tell what.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, when they say, how do you pronounce his name? I'm like, you know, like the shot. They're like, oh, got it. Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Yes.
And so EST is, so that is the number one position.
That's the top dog.
In the carpenters, and you guys are organized as a council, right?
Yes. Regional council.
Regional council. So how many members in the council, Kevin?
Just over 53,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And what's the area? What's the geographic area?
Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, and Eastern Iowa.
Eastern Iowa, got it. Okay. And how long have you been in the position?
A year and 2 months.
Yeah.
You remember, we interviewed him on his first day on the job at one of our shows at Cafe Bianda.
I know, I love it. I think that was his actual first day, right?
It was.
Yeah, it was really, really fun.
And it's been smooth sailing ever since.
And John, you? How long have you been in your position?
6-7 years, something like that. The present position. I've been at the council almost 32 years.
Wow. Did you guys both came from the field?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's important in the building trades, right? Because people always say, like, you need to have come from the field in order to take a position of leadership, which is why I never became a leader at the operators.
Yes.
That amongst the fact that I'm incompetent.
Only thing holding me back as well.
At least that's what I told myself when I cried myself to sleep every night.
Yeah.
I'll never be an officer.
Well, understanding the needs of the members, having been a member, gives you a credibility that just can't be replaced by anything else.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very important I think it is, because you have to experience what they're experiencing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to be able to talk the talk and walk the walk, right? So let's talk about the topic.
Yeah, we just wrapped up our Tax Fraud Days of Action, which is an annual event for the Carpenters Union where during tax day, tax season, April 15th, we, for this entire week, have been out pounding the pavement. We've been at more than 50 government agencies and buildings throughout the state, cities, towns, state capitals, raising awareness about tax fraud in the construction industry, which unfortunately continues to be a scourge we are trying to eradicate.
Mm-hmm.
And John oversees tax fraud for us, so I'd like to have John talk a little bit about, you know, what are we saying when we talk about tax fraud and misclassification. Maybe just give us a brief high-level overview.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Tax fraud occurs, or it happens, when employees are paid by their employer via cash. Cash pay is a term out there in tax fraud.
Mm-hmm.
They could be paid by a check, like a check you would have in your checking account. Many of them actually receive money orders, so an employer will go to a currency exchange and get a lot of money orders. It actually even happens by Venmo. That we've had cases.
I was going to ask you about that. So now Venmo is an acceptable way of paying, quote unquote, in cash.
It is cash pay, but acceptability is what we're going to talk about this morning.
And when you put in like the thing, like, you know, what's it for? What do they put in, like? Under the table wages.
Illegal construction.
Actually, I've seen the documents. It's just a bank statement, and it's Venmo, and it's a deposit.
Yeah.
It doesn't really have a description.
Unbelievable.
It's got a date, Venmo, boom.
Yeah.
$1,000, $800, something like that.
Right.
So in all these cases, why is it considered tax fraud? Is because whether it be cash or a personal check or a money order or Venmo, there are no taxes withheld.
Right.
There are no deductions. Federal taxes, state taxes, unemployment comp, workman's comp, the list goes on. So therefore, there's a lot of entities, there's a lot of money that's shorted by paying employees in this manner.
And that's to ordinary taxpayers and people of the state. I mean, the state has less money coming in, it can offer less services. So not only is the employee losing out, but every taxpayer in Illinois is losing too.
Absolutely. It was calculated that 20.8% of workers in this state are tax fraud employees.
Are you serious?
Or one in five.
Wow.
20%.
Yes.
In general or just the building trades?
No, in general.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, what do you guys like? You go out and talk about, you know, go to your members and go like, hey, if you see something, report it. Like, what? How do you educate your folks about this?
And we do. We've done that for years, right? I mean, we have a magazine that comes out biannually. Local meetings, we're constantly explaining to them that they have to keep their eyes out for this.
I mean, I would imagine that the guys on the job site are probably your best eyes and ears. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it's an issue of fairness, because that's really what this is all about, because we have our signatory contractors, our partners. They are the ones playing by the rules. Mm-hmm. They're following the law. They're paying what they're supposed to be paying into Social Security, into workman's comp, providing benefits for their employees.
Yeah.
And then when they're bidding jobs, they have to go up against these shady contractors paying in cash. Oh, all of a sudden they can come in, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars cheaper on their bids. How do you compete with that? You know, so that's what it's really all about. It's also helping our contractor partners have a fair shake and showing them that, like, look, we are not going, you know, about this lightly. We are going to fight this tooth and nail at every level of government that we can, and enforce every single penalty that we can possibly make happen.
What about for you guys? What about like things like certified payroll? Like, is there such a thing for that? Like,
absolutely. That is part of the program. Is we go after vigorously where we believe the Illinois Prevailing Wage Act is not being complied with. So certified payroll is one of those prove-ups as to whether the rate's being paid or not.
Can you explain it in plain English for the average listener? What is certified payroll?
Certified payroll is the state of Illinois takes surveys, and they determine what is the prevailing rate in this area. What should workers be paid on construction projects in the state of Illinois?
Right.
And there's a number.
Yep.
And that number is pretty close to the union rate. It's not always right on the money, but it's pretty close to the rate. And then contractors that are awarded projects need to comply with that, and they submit what's called certified payroll to show that they are paying the rate.
And if they don't, what's the penalty?
There is a 20% penalty plus the back pay for not paying correctly.
Okay.
So if they're found guilty, they have to pay their workers what they were supposed to pay plus the 20%.
And Kevin, last time you were here, I think Kwame Raoul, our great attorney general, was here. Are there criminal penalties for this as well?
Oh, yeah.
There are.
And we try to pursue all of them as we can, and the state agencies help us.
They've been helpful.
Yes.
They don't just turn a blind eye.
No. No, no. They understand what it means to the state and the cities. I mean, it really is harmful to everyone with the amount of money we're talking about.
It goes back to your point, right? And that is, if they don't pay taxes, right, then, you know, the towns are losing money, right? Roads are losing money, you know,
schools, infrastructure,
like all those things. And then these poor guys that are working for cash, they're not getting Social Security, right?
Right.
Not getting Medicare, you know, they're not getting any of those.
No retirement benefits.
Right, nothing.
Yeah,
it's nothing. Just cash, so yeah. You got to figure that the cash rate isn't our prevailing wage, is
no.
it?
No,
nowhere near it.
Hey, I'm going to pay you $100 an hour in cash.
No,
not at all.
No.
Yeah.
And so what do you?
It's exploitative.
Like Phil said, too, though, a big part of this is how this affects the contractors that employ our members.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they're trying to bid fairly on projects, and they're bidding against these companies that are not playing by the rules.
Which is, you know, look, it's blatantly and inherently unfair, right?
Yeah.
And you have to, like, I think one of the things, like, everybody's like, oh, you know, what does the union do? And blah, blah, blah. The union evens up the playing field.
Exactly.
And this isn't just, by the way, I remember the last time you guys were here, you had gotten a massive settlement for a bunch of people that were not in your union. I mean, this is for everybody, for all workers.
Yeah.
Right? That's why they call the workers' mic, not the union workers' mic.
Exactly.
Right?
That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, so it you know, it helps everybody, right? Even up that playing field and make sure that when things are bid, they're bid correctly.
Right. And another big push this year that maybe John could talk about is workman's comp premium fraud. And that's something that is staggering. I mean, what's the number? Is it $10 billion or something annually, John, that the state federal governments lose out on?
It's $25
billion. Oh, $25 billion. Sorry.
That's a big number.
I was only off by $15 billion. Sorry.
Way to go, Phil. Yeah. You're like a doge.
Yeah. What a number here, number there.
So what is that? Explain what that means. Workers' comp?
Workman's comp. So to close the subject on tax fraud, there is an additional wrinkle. So for listeners that are on there, they're like, hey, they missed a part. There's also something called misclassification. So when you get a check versus cash, it's a gross check. And then many companies will instead of having a W-2, they will send a 1099 like the individual worker is an independent contractor, but they're not.
Like the alleged Uber drivers.
Exactly.
Yeah, gotcha.
And that does fit under the tax fraud umbrella because, again, taxes aren't being paid. So that fits that as well. But to move forward, our international union and we're councils and we're all together on doing this, we're going to focus on this point moving forward, specifically on workman's comp premium fraud.
Okay.
And what that is, if you think of cash pay or misclassification, that's why I brought it up, you would be foolish as a contractor to have those individual workers on a workman's comp roll, because you would be like giving yourself a red flag. So those individuals are not paid into workman's comp. The surety is not getting them money. They're not getting covered.
Mm-hmm.
So those individuals, that those premiums are not being paid. And on the employer side, you have to look at it. Hey, there's $25 billion that should be paid into workman's comp carriers for workman's comp in this country.
$25 billion.
Billion.
So you would think that the insurance companies would have a dog in this fight.
I'm going to get to that in a moment. That's okay. That's very interesting.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry. No, that's very interesting. So, but then on the worker side, imagine being a worker with, you know, Ed, myself, Kevin, working in the field, working as tradespeople.
Notice you didn't say Phil.
I didn't say Phil.
No
attorneys. I appreciate being included there.
Yeah, no attorneys. But I mean, actually, where I'm going is, you know, working physically in a vocation and then not having workman's comp coverage and getting hurt on the job. That's really bad. I mean, that's should be criminal.
Sure.
Yeah. And it increases the premiums for the other legit contractors, right?
It absolutely does. Yeah. If you put $25 billion back in the system, all of our law-abiding contractors would get a big reduction on what that modification rate
is. Or spread the risk, right?
Yeah. Spread the risk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, insurance is a numbers game. The more participants you have, the lower the average cost goes. Absolutely. It's really that
simple. The way it's supposed to work.
Yep. It's supposed to work that way.
Yeah.
So interesting enough, there is a special representative to the general president, and his name is McApeace, and he's putting together this program. And I remember I went to CNA Insurance in downtown Chicago, and they were worried about individual workers that are still on workman's comp but are actually out there working with the tools. So they're concerned about that. And then I couldn't help it. We were talking about how about the companies that have, just to make up some numbers, 80 employees, but only 40 are on the workman's comp roll. Are you guys concerned about premium fraud? And I got to say, the reaction we've gotten thus far is kind of like the sureties kind of seemed like they were okay with the honor system. You know, you write in who's there. They didn't seem to get excited about it. So what we're doing is we're really sending surveys to our signatory contractors to send to Senate members and House members. And we're dealing with trying to get executive directors of departments of insurance in all the states and put a program together to combat this, because this is a serious problem. In construction, it's $5 billion. So you actually do have other people who are treated this way. Hotel workers, restaurant workers, there's others in there. But we're $5 billion of that total. So it is a big problem, and it fits right into the tax fraud bucket.
That's really interesting. You would think that insurance companies would be all over this, right? Because that's their money. That's their premiums, right? I mean, is somebody doing like a cost-benefit analysis and saying like, hey, if we charge everybody, you know, we'd have less money coming in? Is that like is that a thing?
That would be a reasonable thing. I've never read anything like that, but that's something. Maybe you gave us a good idea. Somebody should do that study.
I know there's been some seminars that was mentioned earlier. McApeace has led.
So what happens? Let me ask you guys a question then. What happens if there is, you know, this alleged 1099 guy or cash pay or somebody that's simply not on the rolls for work comp? What happens when they get hurt?
It's on them.
SOL.
Right. So that's right. It's just
what do they call it now? Stroger Hospital?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really. I made it sound like it's funny, but it's not funny.
No, it's not. It's terrible. And that's what they're taking advantage of on a daily basis with wages.
Right.
And then something, God forbid, something like that happened, and they could, you know, lose everything.
So then basically, like, the guy's, first of all, he's not getting his benefits.
Right.
Right. He's not getting insurance. And God forbid something happens and he gets hurt, right? Literally, then he's not insured because he probably doesn't have the hours or have any insurance to begin with. And then he's got no workers' comp protections as well, because they're saying, oh, he's a 1099 guy, or he doesn't exist, you know, or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone loses in this.
Yeah, except the unscrupulous contractor.
They're the only winner.
Who is just cashing in at every level where they cut corners.
True. Workers lose, the public loses, legitimate contractors lose. It's just,
We got to wrap up. I got to tell you, so I know it was tax time for the carpenters when I saw Scabby up on the Kennedy.
Did you see it?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Grand Avenue on the Kennedy Expressway.
I love it. It was like, there's Scabby, you know? So we got to take a break.
Yeah, you can learn more at stoptaxfraud.net.
Okay, perfect. There you go. Stoptaxfraud.net.
Correct.
All right. Phil, you want to take it out?
Yeah, we will be back with more Workers' Mic on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. So, a couple of quick things. Last week, some news came out about the National Labor Relations Board, and there was a whistleblower.
Yeah.
And he worked in IT, but he was...
I think I have his name, Dan Brulis.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you. And so he blew the whistle on the fact that I think when Elon went into the NLRB, all of a sudden, it's like the door was left open.
Right.
And they just get hit and hit and hit by IP addresses from Russia.
Well, when they went in, allegedly, they deleted the security function that would record anybody who came in. So it begs the question, why?
Why?
Because that's crazy.
Why? And what information do they get? So this guy said that, you know, he blew the whistle and all of a sudden there's a nasty note taped up on his door at work. And there's a picture of him walking his dog and the picture is from above. So somebody's flying a drone over this guy. Right. This is stuff. This is Big Brother. This is like science fiction stuff right now.
Right.
Yeah. And so anyway, that happened. And I'm interested to see if and what happens. Right. Are they going to correct it? Are they going to fix it? Because who knows? The NLRB is in flux right now anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And like, what impact is this going to have?
I don't know. From now on, the captive audience meetings are going to be in Russian.
Yeah.
I think they're having a lot of captive audience meetings in El Salvador right now.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
At least they finally let the senator talk to that guy. Because I was like, I don't know if he's still down there. They're not letting him talk.
We don't have to get into politics, but that really evil dude, Stephen Miller, you know, they're asking him questions about it. And he's like, I'm going to ask you a question. What happens if he comes back? You comply with the law, that's what happens.
Or he's given his due process.
And that's exactly right.
And you adjudicate him in...
That's right, Phil. You're 100% right. And by the way, if he's here undocumented, et cetera, or whatever, then then give him his due process because he's entitled to that. That's what the Constitution is based on. And then if you feel that, you know, whatever happens, whatever the law requires is what the law requires. But you can't send an American citizen or somebody from America to an El Salvadorian jail.
Yeah. Then be like, well, we can't get him back. It's like, if you can get them to take him... Yeah. You can get them to give him back.
I think if we go toe-to-toe against El Salvador, I think we might have some leverage there. Like, what are we talking about?
We did that a few times back in the 80s, I want to say.
Well, it's time to do it again.
If you deny due process to undocumented immigrants, then you're denying due process to everybody because all they have to do is say that a documented immigrant is undocumented.
Yeah.
And he's got no due process to argue with it.
Or when anybody is undocumented. Or should you say, this guy's a criminal. All right, Phil, tell us about this Eric Blank, who's been on our show before. He wrote that book, How to Union. And what did he had an interesting...
He's got a great newsletter, if any of our listeners want to check it out. But he had a recent column this week about all this talk about the tariffs and how it could help stimulate American manufacturing again, which we support, right? We'd like to see jobs brought back here.
Of course.
But he said it's basically all for naught if those workers are not part of a union. And he had a great stat in there about how McDonald's workers in Denmark make more than Honda workers in Alabama.
And the non-union Honda workers.
Yes, and the non-union Honda workers in Alabama. So...
That's just outrageous.
It's totally outrageous.
Those burgers
so we talk
are
about,
good.
Yeah, hey, American jobs, we're bringing it back. We're bringing back manufacturing. It's like, okay, it's a means to an end, unfortunately. It's
I read another article as well that Gen Z doesn't want those jobs. Like, they're foregoing college right now to get into the building trades, right, to earn six figures and, you know, benefits, et cetera, et cetera. They're realizing that, hey, that's a good gig, but do I want to work on a shop floor for $7.25 an hour and, you know, risk my arms, my life, et cetera, right? I mean, that's what Timmy's there for. That's why that's why we have children nowadays, right?
That's right.
All right, listen, we got a roll. Thank you to everybody that was on. Thank you to Built to Last. That was super cool to have you guys in the studio and filming us. We're psyched and honored to be on. And one last thing. This coming Friday.
Yeah.
At what time?
8 p.m.
At a place called The Piggery. Phil Davidson, the Phil Davidson, is going to be there emceeing and doing a little bit of stand-up.
Yeah, for the comeback tour.
His comeback tour.
Or and the Danny Did Foundation.
What is it?
The Danny Did Foundation.
Which
our
is?
Good friends. They support research for epilepsy.
Love it.
Yeah.
So you're doing it for charity.
Doing it for charity. There's some great headliners. And yeah, I'm going to sweep off the cobwebs and do some stand-up again. We'll
we
see.
Can't wait to see it.
Phil. I can't wait. To,
I know.
Trust me.
can't wait to heckle me.
I'm going to heckle like nobody's business. I'm not. I'm going to laugh. Anyway, we'll be back next week with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.